Tell us how bumping into Courtney Howard.
And thank you to the presenters for responding to our request. I also want to say thank you to KDLG and KMXT who are airing this so that those in radio line can hear us. I just want to really run down very quickly the agenda, the purpose that we're here for. You know, the way this all started, and I think I explained during one of our calls, that it started with a really small group of five of us who were concerned about just keeping each other informed of our organizations and where we were going. That was the end of at the end of March, and here we are at the end of May, and it's really grown big, and I'm glad to see that. Norm Van Dacker hosted the call last week. He had a schedule conflict. He asked me to moderate this, and I was happy to do that. There are some things that we'd like to accomplish. First of all, is getting information out. We have a number of panelists that are on tap. Really the purpose for this session is to provide an update on the latest work that's being done to protect the public health and safety, and to illustrate amongst us that we're all in this together, that the different entities we're facing a war here against the virus that we can't see, that we're working together as best we could. And all it really is, it doesn't do justice to the kind of information that we need to get out. So I'd like to ask the panelists to really please be concise, be thorough as you could, which is, and provide as much information as you could. On tap for us today, we have from the Health Corporation, we have Dr. Hyman will provide us some information about, the updates or updated information that they have. We also have Dr. Bob Anders, who's with the ANTHC, is the Medical Director of Community and Health Systems Improvement. From the state of Alaska, we have, from the Department of Health and Social Services, we have Charles Pelletin and Tom Kolosky. We also have with us, from the Alaska State Troopers, Lieutenant Paul Fussy, or Fussy, and I believe Sergeant Michael Henry has joined us as well. Some of the other folks we have invited are Patrick Cosbrook from Perryville. From the Nacogdoches Native Village Council, we have Kendra Gottschalk. From the Chilwell Tribal Council, we have Courtney Carty. And the Bristol Bay Borough, we have Greg Belford and Mary Swain. And we're hoping that Todd Larson has joined us as well. As we go about this session, we're going to we've set aside some time toward the end for people to call or text or email questions. So if you have any during the presentations, you're welcome to text or call questions into
conference recording started.
A number here is 907-843-2975. Or you can email your questions to admin@utvb.org. And because, the time that we set aside, the 1 hour doesn't do this topic justice, I'd like to ask the presenters to leave or to provide contact information for others to follow up with, or those listeners to follow up with. And if they have questions, they can contact you as well with those questions if we're not able to answer them. I'd like to first hear from our medical professionals because, we're in a war here, like I said before. It's not a financial crisis. It's not a political crisis. We're in a medical crisis. And we really need our medical, and we count on our medical professionals to lead us, take the lead on this and lead us as we go about addressing the issues. So if Dr. Hyman is on call or on the line, we'd like to hear from you first, Doc.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you, Mr. Anderson. So far as COVID in Bristol Bay, we have had two cases, one in a cannery worker who left the community and one in a member of one of our villages who was diagnosed upon entrance to ANMC. We have done testing in the villages that had potential association with the village-based case. The testing last week, all of the tests were negative. The testing was repeated this week, yesterday, and the results of that testing is not yet known. But about 70 people were screened yesterday in, I believe, a total of four villages. We have the wherewithal to do testing for people here in Bristol Bay at the Kanakanak Hospital. We have several clinics who have the Abbott ID Now test machines in the clinic. Those clinics include Good News Bay, Togiak, Manicotic, New Stew, Koliganic, and Chignik Bay. We are working toward getting Abbott ID Now machines into the remaining villages that have health aides. We have a plan in place for villages that do not have health aides. Should there be a concern or a need to do testing, and that plan would involve sending out a team to do screenings and testings at the village, similar to the team that went out yesterday. Otherwise, we remain prepared at the hospital to see whomever may need to be seen for whatever reason they may need to be seen. We also had a very good conversation today with Mary Swain and a whole collection of folks, including Dr. Anders, Dr. Zink, and several representatives of Incident Command in Anchorage and at the DC level concerning the Samaritan's Purse hospital that is sort of on standby, but I'll let Mary Swain talk about that more. That concludes my report. However, with regards to phone numbers, if you have questions about your health, you can call 842-9244 anytime, day or night. That will get you the emergency room, and a nurse or a physician will be available to answer questions. If you have questions specifically that you want to address to me, I would recommend that you call my secretaries at 842-9218.
Thank you, Dr. Hyman. Thanks for the report. You know, we hear on the, or we see on TV, Dr. Bob, that the priority for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is to have the Native people be the healthiest people in the world. You know, this whole COVID pandemic is probably throwing a big wrench into your, into your efforts to doing that. So can you explain to us or give us an update of where things are with the ANTHC?
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. I agree. I think this is potentially, and in particular for our rural communities and the communities in Bristol Bay region, but also those other communities in rural locations, COVID presents a significant challenge. I think these communities are strong a lot of times because of the social connectedness and living and supporting each other directly in many ways. And COVID is unique in that those same things that have protected these communities for thousands of years are the things that can be somewhat dangerous with COVID. So distancing is required, not necessarily welcoming all visitors that are coming in to visit. And how you go about the day-to-day activities, COVID presents a new challenge. So with that new challenge, I think from an ANTHC standpoint, our big push is to get the resources out to the communities that can use those resources to help. And I think Dr. Hyman touched on some of those that we want to work with our regional partners like Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation or in Kodiak Area Native Association or in any of the other regions to kind of listen to what they need in order to do what they need to do in that region. And so testing has been a big emphasis for us. And so I know yesterday we sent seven more testing analyzers out to Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation to ensure that those were available to the clinics that have health aides to run them and sending out testing kits there and also listening where they need personnel. So our community health aid training program is slower right now because COVID, and we're able to free up a couple health aides and a physician assistant to work with Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation. I think those are supposed to be coming out this weekend to help with their response and to support Bristol Bay in that area. So I think the more we can do at ANTHC to support the regions with the tools they need, I think that's really helpful from my standpoint. The thing that concerns me the most, I think, and probably concerns many in the community, you know, the CDC this week came out with a statement that they think, and the numbers have been varying from different organizations and in different areas, that they think 35% of people with COVID are asymptomatic. And you add in people that, you know, for 4 to 6 days may not have any symptoms, but can also are contagious, so kind of in the pre-symptomatic phase. That means a large number of people out there don't know they have COVID and are at risk of spreading it, and particularly with the fishing workforce coming in. And testing is one tool that can identify. Great to hear from Dr. Hyndman that they're repeating testing, because testing is not 100% and it changes over time, whether the virus is present in the area that we swab and whether we're able to detect it on the analyzer. So the more you can do, the more chance that you'll detect it early. But also I think the community, and when we were out in Dillingham and Igigik and Naknek, I think you have to consider everyone, both yourself and others, to potentially be asymptomatic carriers. And so using the protective measures in the communities that prevent any spread of COVID, I think, is critically important. And I think the only way that, like you said, we won't meet our vision or how our vision will be impacted is if we don't have the correct tools to respond. So that's our big emphasis right now.
Thanks, Bob. You know, and we hear, you know, on the news of different places and different cities like Anchorage and other places slowly starting to open up, and here we are. I mean, we're in Bristol Bay, we're still yet trying to at least be protected. But thank you for your information. Next on tap is Charles Pelletin and Tom Koloski. They're both at the state. Charles is with the Health and Social Services Department, and Tom is with the COVID-19 Unified Command. Let's first hear from Charles.
Hey, thank you very much. Yep, Charles Pelletin, and with the Department of Health and Social Services. Great to talk to you today. I'd like to echo much of what Dr. Hyndman and Dr. Anders have been talking about. We are supporting the efforts on getting more testing equipment into the area to include all the resources required for testing, including staff, as Dr. Anders mentioned. We have an opportunity to participate in that meeting that I believe Dr. Hyndman talked about on the King Salmon issue stuff. I know that's going to be talked about more by some of the community people here in a couple of minutes, but we've been involved looking at how we're going to do some of the processes, procedures, how we're going to walk dog through some of those things. So there's a few things we're going to be going through with the community. We continue our engagement on what is needed down there, listening to what the concerns are and seeing what we can do to help mitigate those concerns. So in talking about Samaritan's Purse and some of the other processes going on down there in the area, I'm going to go ahead and let Tom Koloski talk about some of the things we've done in other areas through the Unified Command. And if there are any questions for the state, I think there's some of the pieces that I would be to talk about are going to be talked about by some of the community people. So I'd like to be able to allow them to the opportunity to talk through those things. And if they have questions or comments, I'll be available to take those. Thanks. Tom?
Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tom Koloski. I am the director of the Critical Infrastructure Branch Unified Command. A couple things that I would like to update people on. As has already been mentioned on this call, right now the state is in the process of opening up some of our businesses, We have gone into phases 3 and 4 of the Reopen Alaska Responsibly Plan, which allows all of our businesses to reopen with certain guidance that's been put in place. This does not mean that we have completely we've completely dropped all of the mandates, which are kind of controlling and providing some additional layers of protective measures for people coming into the state. On our website, the State of Alaska website at covid19.alaska.gov, all the documentation for our current mandates and the Reopen Alaska Responsibly Plan are available. Specifically under the phases 3 and 4, there's some detailed guidance there on the 5 mandates that are still in place and what they mean for specific populations. There's some general guidance which talks about things that cut across all aspects of Alaskan life for social distancing, recommended hygiene practices, wearing masks in public, and being aware of our more vulnerable populations. And there's also some detailed guidance for the mandates that are still in effect. Of the 5 that are still in effect, 3 of them specifically are about adding additional layers of protection for people coming into the state and moving between Alaskan communities. All 3 of those are applying to our personnel who are engaged in the commercial fishing industry. The first of those is Health Mandate 10, which requires all persons arriving to the state to observe a 14-day self-quarantine procedure. And there's an additional appendix to Mandate 10 that is specifically for workers who are coming in to work in a seafood processing plant or processing vessel. It's got some tighter restrictions for travel and quarantine, reinforced with a testing strategy for those people before they get in place or before they get start mixing with the general population, either at their plant and definitely before they start having any contact with the local communities where the plant is based at. Those procedures have been put in place, and so far they've been very successful at identifying people during their quarantine process. Even if they're asymptomatic, we've identified a number of people who've been positive for the virus. Additionally, Health Mandate 17 is specifically for our commercial fishing vessels and our independent fishing harvesters like our set net sites. It establishes protective measures and guidelines which all of those vessels and set net harvesters must follow in order to operate safely in our small communities, and it requires them to acknowledge and let us know that they're aware of these requirements and that they have enacted a protective plan, either the plans that were prepared by the state of Alaska or the protective plans that were prepared by a corporate fleet or a fishing association. They have to acknowledge those plans and before they sell any of their catch. So that's kind of the enforcement mechanism there. Additionally, Health Mandate 18 is still in effect. This is our in-state travel order, which talks about the protective measures that must be followed when someone is traveling from a community that's on the road or Alaska Marine Highway system to a community that's off the road system. So those 3 mandates still provide protections and some restrictions on travel for people arriving to the state and traveling out to our remote areas. That includes the people that are engaged with the commercial fishing industry. And there's also some additional tools that are available to local communities to enact with through local ordinances. We just ask that they work with us at the Unified Command and kind of have a conversation with us prior to putting those local ordinances in place. So those are the mandates that we still have that are providing protective measures for our seasonal workforces that are coming in, like our commercial fisheries folks. With that, sir, I can answer any questions now, or I can stay on the line and Charles and I can answer questions as they come up. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Something that I heard that I haven't heard yet, either of you mentioned, I'm not quite sure if either of you would be the right person, but you know, the docks and harbors, you know, and the mooring sites are going to be really popular this summer, you know, with the boats. How does the person go about, or how does anyone go about getting a facility assessment of, you know, of those sites?
Is
not sure what you're referring to with facility assessments, sir. You're looking for assistance with developing protective measures for a public facility like a harbor or shipyard?
Yes.
Right now we have instructions for developing protective plans that are available out on our website, sir. We don't have folks that are available to engage directly within the communities that are available from the Unified Command Staff. Charles, I'm not sure if this is something that the public health nurses can provide assistance to, but right now we don't provide on-site assistance like that from the Unified Command Staff.
Mr.
Anderson, I was just going to say I could make sure that I call you to understand the question, the scope of what you're looking for. Are you looking for more like pleasure craft coming in from other locations, or this more of the commercial fishing?
Well, it's more along the lines of commercial fishing because, you know, we do have, communities that have harbors, right? Not only here in Dillingham, but throughout the district. And I'm wondering what, if there are anything, that they need to do in order to ensure, that there's some protection or level of safety.
Sir, this is Tom Kowalski. One of the things we've done is we've been working back and forth with the Alaska Port and Harbor Masters Association, and they've developed some pretty good recommendations for harbor masters, along with some signage and things that they can put up to make sure that that arriving crews and vessel captains are aware of their particular safety measures they've enacted there at the port, and that they're aware of the different state mandates. So that would be one avenue for some support there, sir.
Okay, great. But there is some information on the website, right?
Yes, sir. The information we have on the website is specifically the how to develop a community workforce protective plan. So it will talk through different things it's mostly for employers to talk through how they can analyze their facility and their business model to put a protective plan in place.
Okay, thank you. Next online is Lieutenant Paul Fussy, who's with the Alaska State Troopers to talk. We'd like to hear some information, Lieutenant, on the enforcement aspects of not only the mandates but the other, the other regulations that that will be enforced.
Well, thank you, Mr. Anderson. People who are listening, my name is Paul Fussy. I'm the State Search and Rescue Coordinator. I'm also the State Troopers Liaison for Emergency Management. So I am part of the Unified Command here at the State Emergency Operations Center. So what we have been working on with the different groups and ANTHC, with the medevacs, I know you were asking about the enforcement of the mandates. The governor has mentioned many times that Alaska is free. People in Alaska enjoy being out and about. However, with the mandates, the governor has said many times, and through the SCOC and Commissioner Crum has also through DHSS, that we expect and anticipate Alaskans to follow the mandates. And being such, that the numbers have been low enough that the governor has gone to phase 3 and 4, to opening the state up. Now, we are also in the SCLC working with the communities. We had actually 2 phone calls today with the Bristol Bay, one working on the medevac process in case we do need to get that up and going, and also working with the communities. And as Tom said earlier, we talked to Mr. Larson. When you start looking at your different mandates, then we'd like to sit there and help out and talk to you about the local mandates. As state troopers, we do not enforce local mandates. Now, the chief of staff, Mr. Stevens, as I mentioned about different security aspects and the meetings we had earlier today, the original team was out looking there in Dillingham. I'm not part of that aspect of it, but I know that they're looking to set up the alternate testing site there in Dillingham, and then the security team will be working with your folks there in Dillingham to help out. So that's how those the local mandates will be. Once again, the state troopers, we do not enforce local mandates, and we are encouraging people to self-police with the state mandates. And as Tom said, the numbers of the mandates are getting down lower and lower due to the fact the residents of Alaska have been phenomenal and have been abiding by those mandates. That is the two-week quarantine, that is filling out the traveler declaration forms. Those are all online now, and those go through the DHSS. So people have been really phenomenal about that. But like Tom said, we are down to mandates 10, 14, 15, 17, and 18, and that is due to the fact that people are self-enforcing themselves to the mandates. So that's what I have, Mr. Anderson, pending any further questions, sir.
Okay, thank you, Lieutenant. Patrick Cosbrook, are you online? Maybe he'll call in later, but from the NACNIC Native Village Council, we have Kendra Gottschalk. Kendra, can you give us an update, please?
Hi, everybody. This is Kendra from NACNIC Native Village Council. We have a couple things going on. It's been a super busy week, as the last couple months have actually been. This week, the council, with some support from BDRSDA, has set up little sanitizer caddies at public places. So mostly at hardware stores, grocery stores, Napa, at LFS and CMAR, and then at the bank and the grocery store and gas pumps in King Salmon, you'll have the option to have gloves that are available in sanitizer pumps to help just mitigate any transmission of COVID-19. So please utilize those and do your best to be mindful about public areas. Our clinic was finally finished, and we're opening up this week. It's been, it hasn't been in use for a couple months now, but we're eager to get it all open. And on that note, we are getting the testing tent set up, I believe, early next week from ANTHC. So we'll have a drive-through testing center available. We are asking that anybody traveling in from other villages and watershed areas, or coming in to stay here for subsistence or commercial fisheries, even if you are, you know, rural Alaskan, that you consider coming by and taking a test. A lot of you all stay with multi-generational families, with your cousins and your aunts and your grandparents. So by coming by and testing, that could really help spread or stop spread of any COVID in the community. On another note, we were contacted by the Coast Guard last week, and they'll be conducting surveys out in rural areas here from June 8th through the 22nd. And their goal there is to travel around and evaluate all fuel facilities and village dynamics. That's as much as I know about the Coast Guard anticipating traveling around here. Other than that, a couple issues that we are still running into are the confusion between the processor plans, the state mandates, and other village ordinances. We just ask that everybody be educated and be mindful and be sensitive of all these. Really consider, you know, taking time to become educated and knowledgeable about everything like this, and spread what you know too. A lot of negativity is coming up as we are getting closer to the season, people impatient, people being, you know, feeling like they're being taken advantage of. But please just consider that this is for the wellness of everybody involved in the communities for a successful season. Just be mindful and be loving to everybody. And that's all I've got. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Kendra, and that's excellent advice. You need to be patient and be mindful of others, because we're not doing this just to protect ourselves. We're all in this together, and that, you know, this is a war that together we can win. Courtney Cardi, are you on the line?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Ralph, and thank you, everyone, for the opportunity to present today. Courtney Carty, Tribal Administrator for the Tsuklayung Tribe here in Dillingham. Our big update for the week is that we are still in the process of trying to hire for our COVID response coordinator, and I guess I would encourage anyone who's listening and interested in that position to contact us for an application, as well as the Council's establishing an emergency operations center to house our COVID coordinator and all of our response efforts. Projects that we're focusing on trying to implement here in Dillingham are food security and related to in-home health, sanitation, and providing PPE in the form of what we're calling care packages for the approximately 1,000 households here in Dillingham. It's kind of a unique situation for our tribe in comparison to others in responding to COVID in our communities. Many of the other villages are much smaller and able to rapidly respond to their community's needs. When we're in this large blended community, we have a few loopholes to jump through. So we're very diligently working through that with our legal teams and our CARES committee that the council has established. This week, we've also been busy working with our senators and the Alaska Congressional Delegation to try to request and advocate for a big need is a funding deadline extension for the Treasury funds that have gone out to tribes. Those funds end at the end of this calendar year, and it's pretty impractical to be able to spend and also respond to a virus that isn't quite here yet in just a few short months. So we're hoping to get the deadline for those funds streamlined with the BIA Aid to Tribal Government funds, which don't end until the end of next fiscal year. In terms of what other tribes could be doing or other communities should be doing to prevent COVID from coming to our communities, I think it's important that we encourage our families and friends who are coming home to harvest this season to be tested out in Anchorage, Fairbanks, maybe Seattle, wherever they're coming from, before returning home to Bristol Bay. Testing is available at ANMC and also the Anchorage Airport for people to maybe provide that level of assurance to our communities and to your families before coming home. And then I'll just end with saying that I think it's important for us to remember that we're really walking a very fine line between being precautious and paranoid in regards to how we deal with this COVID pandemic, and that it's important that we find balance through self-care. I just hope that everyone is practicing healthy habits, not just washing our hands, but taking good self-care of our own selves and our families, getting outdoors, taking this time to hike, garden, gather, fish, and subsist. With that, I'll provide our contact information. Our Tribal Council's number is 907-842-2384, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. Your advice with Kendra's is really, really meaningful, especially during this time when tensions run high, and we want to do the best that we could to avoid any kind of violence, first of all, and you know, anything negative to be happening that that shouldn't be. We have Greg Brelford and Mary Swain from the Bristol Bay Borough. Greg, Mary.
Hi, Ralph. This is Mary. Thank you, first of all, for inviting us today. I'll be speaking not really on behalf of the Bristol Bay Borough, but I will speak on behalf of Chemai Community Health Center. I just wanted to give an update of what's happening for that. And that is we, you know, as the season approaches, of course, people are in town, so our clinic is still seeing the normal care that we normally see this time of year. We've had multiple people in our ER at one time over the last week or two. So all the typical things we see for a season is still happening. In addition to that, we're having to respond to COVID. So our increased staffing should be here. What's not here already will be here the first of next week. We have opened our testing site now. I think we did about 40 yesterday, on top of the 250 that we did outside of the testing center in big groups. We also tested today. We used our Cepheid machine for those that we sampled today at the testing site. So far, all of them are coming back negative. So it's good to know that that machine is going to be able to be functional, and we're able to do littler groups with that machine and know that if somebody is sick or wants to get on a boat, we'll have a response immediately. And by immediate, I say within a couple hours, just because of the time it takes to process them. We also have our, what we call an ER in a can, being delivered this weekend, I believe. And that is a 20-foot container that's outfitted 100% as an ER. And we're going to put that behind the clinic to help ease some of the burden of the main clinic, especially for those that we know are positive or we suspect to be positive, to keep them out of the clinic. We also have our isolation area that should be on the barge this weekend. They should be here, I think, Sunday or Monday to be set up. Hopefully that'll be completely functional the second week of June once we get electrical and all of that put into place. We're working currently on taking some testing over to South Naknek. We have the staff to do it now, so tomorrow we're going to coordinate with the people in South Naknek and see what they would like us to do, if they do want us to come over, if they don't want us to come over, and basically get a number so we know that we took enough test supplies over there so that we can be as efficient as we can. I feel like they are, they're part of our community, and they need testing. So if we have it available here, we need to be taking it to them as well. We're also working with Big Creek Fisheries down in the Izegis area. They have a provider that hasn't done swabbing, so she or he, I'm not sure which it is, it's coming up this weekend. They will be working with us, and we'll be training them, and then we will coordinate all their testing for their processing plant this summer as well. I just want to echo a little bit of what Kendra and everybody else has said, and that is, you know, we're all working through this, and please be kind to one another. As I say to everyone, please do something nice for somebody every single day. You never know what a difference you will make if you just even smile at somebody or say hello. So that's all I have for Shemai.
Thank you, Mary. I'm sorry,
Ralph, if I could say one more thing. We did have a meeting with Samaritan's Purse, as Dr. Hyman mentioned. That meeting is ongoing. We're working out logistics right now, and who gets put there, how, what's the criteria, those kinds of things. The team that is here now will be back tomorrow, and we'll have a longer discussion on specifically what we envision for that facility if they do need to come out. So probably a better update on that on the next show.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Greg,
thank
do you have anything to add? Hello? Maybe Greg will, maybe he muted himself and is talking to a muted phone. How about if we heard from Todd Larson, the city of Dillingham?
Yes, sir. Thank you. So what's happened here recently, as you heard, Capstone over here has stood up their testing center. I didn't get new numbers last night, but as of Monday night, they had conducted 213 tests. And as everybody's been talking about, the Anchorage Airport, Ted Stevens Airport, it has testing available for people coming in from out of state that's headed out to rural areas. The thing that I think with Lieutenant Fussy, when we're talking about AST, this is there's a vulnerability assessment that Denali Universal Services conducted in those three locations. And what they're doing is they came in last week. They're gonna provide a report to the chief of staff, the governor's chief of staff, and Commissioner Crum, and then they're going to apply some resources to get some security to help with the enforcement action. So Lieutenant Fussy probably didn't. That's probably out of his ballpark, but that's what's going on with those. We have. Port Harbor meeting tonight at 5:30. We'll finalize the harbor rules and regulations for the season. We've been working hard. It's the third meeting on that. We've got travel permits in place with testing requirements and a number of things to protect our citizens and the fishermen and everyone involved in this fishing season. We are looking at the emergency ordinances. The 2020-08-09-10 Alpha, those three, and we're going to look at those in the regular meeting again. Thursday night, there's been some you know, confusion with those. We're going to try to get that all scrubbed out and get it in a readable format for everyone, because we realize there's some confusion, so we want to get that cleared up as soon as we can and get that back out. That's our regular council meeting again Thursday night. I did hire a PIO and Jamie O'Connor. She's her family's long-known, well-known family here in Dillingham. And she's been about a week, and she's engaging a lot of organizations and helping us with getting a clear message out and getting doing some great work for me. And we are going to hire a CARES manager much like the tribe did or is working on. But I think we may have gotten one today. And that's a big program, so it's going to take some work, and we had to put someone else on. The last thing I want to put out is on the other side of on resources, I want to draw everybody's attention to the Alaska CARES funding program. There's $290 million. This is for businesses. There's $290 million that for the state, and the legislature and or governor said 20% of that is ear tagged for rural Alaska, which is $58 million, and it's grants, and it's going to go live on the 1st of June, but I encourage anyone that had a business that was impacted by COVID to get online and find it under the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development at the state of Alaska. The grant range is from $5,000 to $100,000. The applications aren't available yet, but the criteria are on there. I want to reinforce, please get out there and look at that. That is a good program to help businesses that were impacted by the COVID response. And that's all I have, Ralph, and subject to your questions.
Great. Thank you, Todd. We're going to take the next few minutes. I'll turn the mic over to Alana and ask them for questions and answers. But before we get into that, there are a couple things that questions that I have to our medical professionals. And they were suggested, information or messages. I guess I'd be asking to Dr. Hyman and Bob Anders, just looking at things generally. Dr. Hyman, what's the most important for the residents and the fishing community should be aware of as we're approaching this summer?
I think the most important thing that people should be aware of is the symptoms to be watching out for, number one. And number two, all of the same old, plain old stuff still goes. We are protecting each other by wearing face masks. We are protecting ourselves by washing our hands. I think that one of the things that became clear when looking at some of the projections is that even when fishing leaves, when all of the fishermen are gone from Bristol Bay, we are still at risk of COVID coming in because it's still going to be around. And people are going to, in all honesty, likely increase their travel in and out of Anchorage. And COVID will be here even if the fishermen weren't. So we need to continue to be self-aware of the symptoms, fever, cough, shortness of breath, extreme fatigue. Unfortunately, the list goes on down to sore throat, sniffles, mild cough. And as Dr. Anders mentioned, so many people are asymptomatic with the disease. But certainly if you are having symptoms, please call first and then come and be tested. And it is still wise and necessary to quarantine yourself if you've come back from Anchorage based on the city mandates as well as on good common sense, or even if the city stops the 14-day quarantine, you need to be aware of where you are and where you have gone and who you have been around. Because if, God forbid, you become ill or somebody around you becomes ill, you need to know who you've been close to so that we can trace and track and discover other people with COVID so that we can all be protected as a community.
Thank you, Dr. Hyman. I guess I have just a quick question to Bob Anders. Bob, as you look at not only our region, but others as well, at the Alaska Native Health Tribal Health Consortium, what do you see are the gaps? How can we fill the gaps? What can we do?
I think this call is addressing one of the gaps in the calls that we had earlier. I think communication is key. And I think regionally, many regions are having daily or weekly calls with many different stakeholders. I think this is different, that it impacts industry, community organizations, the healthcare system, and many people that don't necessarily on a day-to-day basis need to be involved in health-related decisions are now making many healthcare-related decisions or having to be knowledgeable on that. So one of the key things for me or a gap that I think is closing is communication. So the more that everyone's on the same page and knows what's going on, I think the better prepared we are. I think mixed messages and incomplete information leads to more concern and kind of a crisis mentality. The more we can communicate, the more we know where the deficits are, I think the better position we are. So if I had to pick one key gap area is communication. We need to continue to emphasize that.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Anders. I'll now turn it over to Alana. Alana?
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Ralph. Before we jump right into questions, I just wanted to remind everybody listening that you can send questions live in one of two ways. You can text 907-843-2975, or you can email them to admin@utbb.org. UTBB is just short for United Tribes of Bristol Bay. Again, that's admin@utbb.org. And Ashlyn from our team has been compiling questions that you have already sent. So I will ask Ashlyn to share one of those questions.
The first question we have is regarding boat transfers between regions. If a person were to transfer from the Naknek-Quijac region to the Nooshigak region, would that boat need to go into quarantine again?
Great. Thanks so much, Ashlyn. Ralph, I'm not sure exactly who would be best to answer that question, potentially somebody from enforcement or one of our local communities. If someone transfers, are they subject to quarantine restrictions again?
I believe someone gave a rundown of the state mandates, and that's, I believe, the quarantine mandate was, or the travel mandate might be covered there. Lieutenant Paul or Charles or Tom, would you like to take a shot at that answer? A shot at the question?
So everybody, this is Paul Fussy, and thank you for the question. So make sure I understand it correctly. If someone is in the Naknek-Quijac area, if they drop their blue card and go over to the Nooshigak area, would they need to quarantine again? Is that the question?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good example.
Okay. So under the state mandate, commercial fishing are essential services. If they have come in and if they're in the Naknek area and they've done their testing, they've done their two-week quarantine, under the state mandate, they would not have to quarantine again. However, I know Dillingham, and I'm not going to answer this part. I'll leave this to Mr. Larson. But Dillingham has their own community area for enforcement. But under Mandate 17, and I recommend everybody goes on the website to read it and go through it. If you've already filed your paperwork saying that you will follow the mandates and do all the paperwork, then it's not an issue with the state, but I'm not going to answer for Dillingham. I don't know if Mr. Larson is still on. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that question, the answer to that question?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the short answer is yes. But we only control the, boundaries of the city of Dillingham. So if they just come over the district and stay in the water, no harm, no foul. But if you touch ground, it's city of Dillingham, the answer is yes. Our boundaries are I should throw in there too. Right now, and I say right now because, again, we're talking about adjusting them just a little bit on Thursday, or I'm not sure what the council is going to do completely, but the Dillingham census area. So that's, if you come from within the Dillingham census area, you're good to go.
Great. Thanks so much, Todd. Ashlyn, is there another question that came in?
Yes. Since the state is going into stages 3 and 4 and bars are opening up, are the cities of Naknek and Dillingham considering putting any restriction on the opening of bars?
Thanks, Ashlyn. Bristol Bay Borough and City of Dillingham, would you guys like to address that question?
This is Mary from Bristol Bay Borough. And I know that it is on our agenda to be discussing that on our Monday meeting. I am not sure what the outcome will be with that, but it is on the agenda for Monday for Naknek King Salmon, South Naknek.
Great. Thanks, Mary. Todd, did you want to add anything for Dillingham?
Yeah, I'll just say that we're going to be looking at it too, but one of the things I'd like to remind everybody or bring it to their attention too, just to kind of frame this a little bit, is, I use the analogy of a rock into a pond of water, nice calm pond of water. When that rock hits, that's Wuhan, China. As the ripples go across the country, across the world, into the lower 48, it starts to calm down by Wuhan, comes up to Alaska, we finally, the wave finally hit here. Well, the waves, as we see it, waves haven't hit Dillingham yet, or King Salmon or Naknek. So when a lot of folks are talking about going back to business as usual or going back to, full restaurants and bars, they don't realize that we are at the very tail end of the impacts and effects. And then when you take, for us, maybe 5,000, 4,500 people from across the country, across the world, into a concentrated area, that's where we're coming from. It adds kind of a heightened danger for us, and that's why we're clamping down so hard on things, because we care that much about our folks and all of the folks that show up here. So so I just want to, for some of the state leaders that are there, imagine, in Anchorage, you have about 300,000 people. Imagine now about 600,000 people show up in Anchorage to work there, work around there, go out into the mountains. And you can kind of gauge the size of this issue that we're facing. You don't know where they came from. 600,000 people being absorbed into Anchorage for a short period of time would definitely increase your pucker factor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mary and Todd, for answering that question. Ashlyn, you have the next question.
Yes. What are safety measures being taken for first responders, and will they have daily COVID tests? And then if they get a positive test, how will it affect the rest of the ambulance crew, and do they have plans?
Great. Thanks so much. Dr. Hyneman, if you're still on, maybe you would feel comfortable talking about the first responders' plans, and maybe someone from Bristol Bay Borough as well.
So far as plans for daily COVID tests, I'm not aware of plans for daily COVID tests at this time, but I would not rule it out. So far as if a person showed up symptomatic on a periodic test, let's call it, since I'm not sure what that the period would be, whether it would be every 3 days, every 5 days, every week. But if somebody showed up with COVID on one of those tests, that person, of course, would have to go home, and we would follow the CDC guidelines with regards to return to work for that person. The EMS crews are currently running in two-person teams, so the partner on that team would also have to go into quarantine to ensure that that person did not come down with COVID as well. That is the plan at this point. I know that EMS has requested some additional personnel because we currently have five teams of two people apiece, and I know that a portion of those teams anticipate commercial fishing, and so I know that EMS has asked for additional staffing during the bulk of the fishing season.
Great. Thanks so much, Dr. Hyman. Mary from Chemai Clinic, did you want to address that question as well?
So I don't know the exact protocols that our EMS has going on, but I do know that testing is available to anybody that wants it at any time, and if they deem that they need it daily, we would do it daily because they are frontline and they need to be protected and know that they are safe, as well as all of them, and they're going home to their family, so we need to make sure that all of them are safe. But I honestly, I know that they have summertime hired personnel, and I believe they're doing alternating shifts with them, and they are running a front and a back separate team so that there's no cross-contamination. But outside of that, I don't know, but I can definitely make sure that I know or make sure that somebody is available next time so that we can address that.
Great. Thanks so much, Mary. I just wanted to check in with you on time, Ralph. Are we good for one more question?
Yeah, we're good for one more question.
Okay, great. Ashlyn, do you have the last question you can hear?
Yes. How many cannery workers will have, if tested positive, how many cannery workers will have to test positive before considering shutting down a fish processing plant?
Great. Thanks, Ashlyn. The question was, what's kind of the threshold for fish processing plants in terms of an outbreak to warrant a shutdown? I'm not sure if there's anyone on the call who would like to speak to that directly. We don't necessarily have anybody directly from industry, but maybe somebody from DHSS?
Yeah, this is Charles Pelton, and that is a great question. And the thing is that it's going to depend on many different factors. Of course, the size of the fishery, how many people are starting to have this happen. Clearly, our number one priority is going to be the safety and health of the community. And if we see something starting to trend, we will completely engage. And I'm sure with all the different conversations we've been having that we will come up with some very specific things on here. But we would engage. We would ensure that we are isolating those individuals as required, and we want to make sure we don't let this get out of hand and get out of control. So clearly we would be taking the action that's appropriate, and we would be coordinating our effort in collaboration with the community in the Bristol Bay Area and with BBHC and Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
Great. Thanks so much, Charles. And just a reminder, if you weren't able to get your question on the air, you can still text or email your questions to the numbers in the email stated on the flyer or earlier, and we will make sure that an answer gets to you or it's included in another update. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Ralph. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm just going to keep my closing remarks very brief. And to thank everyone for not only calling in, but thank those who are listening. Thanks to KDLG and KMXT for airing this update. You know, we have a survey we hope that will follow this session. Please fill it out. Please let us know the kinds of topics that you would like us to cover during these updates. Again, please be safe. Please be patient with each other. And remember that we're all in this together. Wash your hands. Practice safe distancing. And again, I want to thank everybody for participating. And whenever we might be doing this again next week, depending on schedules and that sort of thing. But again, thank you very much. Be safe. Bye-bye.